Keir Starmer has winkled out all of the left, he said, and has constructed a framework of pro-business policies that make it in my financial interest to vote Labour. Well, if a billionaire, multi-billionaire actually, it's worth more than £2 billion, if a billionaire can see the Labour programme as being in his financial interest, you can be sure it is not in the financial interest of the vast majority of people. And so I said overnight, having watched Sky News at 1 a.m, in which the first three items on the news, all three of them long items, the first three items being about illegal migration, seeing the bounce in the polls that Farage and Reform are experiencing, and having canvassed a ward in Rochdale with my team yesterday and discovering that 50% of those who expressed a voting intention are voting Reform in Rochdale, I realised that the danger of Farage running away with this election are very real indeed. The first reason is that the others have nothing to say. Farage has something to say. What he's saying is wrong. What he's saying will not solve our problems and will deepen many of our pre-existing policies. But he is saying something. And he's saying it with zeal. He's saying it with a spring in his step. And he's speaking it in human, as opposed to the desiccated calculating machines of Starmerism in particular. I'm going to leave Rishi Sunak out. He couldn't even persuade some sheep in a field yesterday to come forward to eat from his bucket full of meal. Starmer's deliberate gutting of Labour has left a vacuum which Farage is determined to fill. So we are the antidote, not just to Labour, but to Reform. If there's going to be a leader of the opposition to Keir Starmer, Prime Minister, God forbid, but looking increasingly likely, and then that should be me. That should be me. I can speak human too, as the 3 million people who watch me every single week on screen already know. I have spring in my step, notwithstanding that I'm not a spring chicken. I haven't lost my zeal. My determination is real, and I'm going to be joined by much younger people than I, with great talent and determination, and they are in the room and available for interview after I finish speaking. Because we do have the answers. We say that 16 years of austerity, 16 years, pretty soon you'll be able to vote at 16. 16 years of austerity has gutted our country. It has left it cold, even in this globally warm summer we're enjoying. It has left it cold, it has left it poor, and it has left it purposeless almost entirely. But for the efforts of the heroes of the voluntary sector who rescue our youth into their boxing clubs, their football clubs, but for them, unfunded, underfunded always, unfunded often. But for those people, we would have a feral army of millions of young people on our streets with no real purpose, having lost their religion, having lost their sense of who they are, what they are. Patriotism has become a dirty word in Britain under this long era of what I call Blairism that has brought us global. Not even sure if they're men or if they're women. Requiring Tony Blair, no less, to assert. Yesterday, immediately accepted and agreed by Starmer. Yes, a man has a penis and a woman has a vagina. Who knew that we would need such reassurance from our political leaders? But that's how far we've come. Our people have lost their way. Our political leaders seem quite content about that, because they don't really feel like they are from here. And in Sunak's case, not. He's an American with a green card. And I have no doubt his airline ticket booked. Our political leaders are from anywhere. We are from here. And we're not going anywhere. In most cases, cannot go anywhere. We can't live in another country, still less an imaginary country. We can't live in an imaginary time, in some utopian future. We have to live here and seek to represent people here. And that's why we can say, without fear of contradiction, that in many of the constituencies in which we are standing and challenging, half or more than half of the children are living in poverty. Officially in poverty. Half. In James's case and in other Birmingham cases, more than half. In my case, 45%. In Newham, where I was the night before last, 55% of the children are living in poverty. Fuel poverty. Material poverty. Food poverty. And when poverty stalks the land and no hope is offered by anyone with a political vision, then if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. Which brings me back to Farage. Farage's mirage is that the problems of Britain are because of the presence in our country of millions of people, many of them second generation, many of them even third generation, that somehow the fault is theirs, and if there were fewer of them, then our problems would miraculously be solved. He never explains how, in an era when you can't get a doctor's appointment, and when you can wait years for a hospital appointment, stopping tens of thousands of medical workers, health service workers, care workers from coming to Britain, how that's going to solve our problems. And with them to this extent, I ask myself, why do we have to bring somebody from the Philippines or from Nigeria to plump up our pillows, to bed bath us, to attend to our needs in the health service? Why can't our own people do that? Well, one reason is that you can earn more in Aldi. Aldi pay more, and you get less abuse, and you don't have to bed bath anybody. The poverty pay in Britain, which is stagnant, and in some cases going backwards in real terms when inflation is factored in, is a key part of Britain's problems. We're not in favour of mass immigration. We explain in here in some detail the alternatives to it. We're not in favour of it. First, because we're a workers' party and a reserve army of labour arriving into the labour market is not in the interests of Britain's workers. How could it be? If you're a trade union official, and you go in for a wage increase, and the boss tells you there's 50 people waiting outside the gate to come and work for less, so your increase is null and void, it's cancelled. How could that be in the interests of the workers? We're not in favour of mass immigration for the reason that it guts the living standards and the possibilities of progress in the countries from which the mass immigration is coming. We think the people of the Philippines deserve better health care. The people of African Commonwealth countries that are coming here, they need these professionals. So it's not that we are advocating mass immigration, but we insist on this, that anyone here, wherever they came from, whatever color they are, however they pray, must be equal one with the other. And we will not tolerate bigotry and discrimination in this country. Any minority, any racial minority, any religious minority, any sexual minority, any minority orientations, we will not accept it. But we believe that we go with the grain of the great mass of the British people when we say that Great Britain isn't great anymore, that it has been allowed to sink. And one of the reasons for that is the decades of subservience, first to the European Union and now to the United States. One of the reasons why I fought hard for Brexit was so we could escape the stranglehold on our domestic and foreign policies of the European Union. But what do we now have instead? What have the Tories done with Brexit? They've made us the 51st state of the United States of America. Western Europe is full of vassal states, but we are vassal number one. Uncle Sam, John Bull, tell us the job, ask how high. We have followed a senile dementia patient who cannot control even his bodily functions to control us, to control the fights we picked, to control the wars we're in or are preparing for, to ratchet up still further the money we spend on weapons and war. People tell us there's no money for youth services, no money to keep our pensioners warm in the winter. We spend £12,000 per minute on nuclear weapons. £12,000 every minute of every day we spend as a country on nuclear weapons. And we've just seen a Dutch auction between Labour and the Conservatives as to who will pledge to spend still more. It's about to rise hundreds of billions we are going to be spending on weapons and war. And the weapons don't even work. Ask yourselves where the aircraft carriers are. Ask yourself where the destroyer that was sent to the Red Sea. What happened to it? Why was it withdrawn? The weapons don't even work. We can't stop. Yesterday, 822 people crossed the English Channel on rubber boats. The Royal Navy, you didn't have to turn a Nelson's eye. There were no ships. There were no Royal Navy ships. Because they're in the Red Sea. They're in the Black Sea. They're in the South China Sea. threatening other people rather than defending our own country and our own legitimate interests. This Dutch auction, these wars, may render all of this odious, may render all manifestos odious, because we are closer than anyone in the mainstream media is prepared to acknowledge, let alone explain. We are closer to World War III than we have ever been. And I'm someone who, as a child, remembers the Cuban Missile Crisis. NATO, from last night, led by the failed Dutch politician Rutte, another Blairite in charge of the war machine. What could possibly go wrong? Stoltenberg, the tailor from Norway, has returned to run the Norwegian National Bank. Rutte, a man red in tooth and claw for confrontation and war, will now edge us ever closer in a game of nuclear bluff with Russia and with China, and from yesterday with North Korea. I don't fancy that North Korea much. I've been there. Don't want to bring it here. But I wouldn't like to fight them. I certainly wouldn't like to fight them, Russia and China and Iran, all at the same time. Not with an army that could fit very comfortably into Villa Park. That doesn't sound like good foreign policy to me. But that's where we are. We have a group of leaders in the West, soon presumably to be joined by Keir Starmer, that want to pick a fight with everybody whose economy is on the rise as our economy sinks and sinks. People who've got national cohesion, people who are behind their national leaderships, people who are patriotic, people who have not lost their religion, confronting the woke armies of the West. What could possibly go wrong? So we say a Britain where children are living in their millions in poverty, where houses are overcrowded, are cold and damp. I speak as the Member of Parliament for Rochdale, where a baby of two died from damp just a couple of years ago. Cold, damp, dangerous houses, insufficient in quantity, pitiful in quality, with no one with a plan, unlike us, for the building of a million council houses. Not bogus, artificial, arm's length, semi-privatized housing stock, called a housing association, though there's nothing associative about it, where you cannot reach, still less influence the people making decisions about your housing and your environment. We believe in council housing, where the tenant elects their landlord every year and can unelect them if they're unhappy with the service that is being provided. We're involved in the leasehold, fleecehold campaign by the Hornets, doing a wonderful job they are. The Hornet campaign, calling for the farce of leasehold to be transformed. We support it entirely. We want a million council houses. We want to put our own people back to work. We want to revive the whole concept of skilled work, at which we once excelled. And we want to end Britain's posture of confrontation around the globe. want to put our people back to work, and we want to give them hope. We want to give them a purpose, a national, patriotic purpose. That's us, the Workers' Party of Britain.
Andrew Murray, Morning Star. This is the first general election the Workers' Party
has fought.
How would you sum up on the doorstep one or at the most two reasons why somebody should, for the first time, it will be for the first time, vote for the Workers' Party?
We say that Britain's participation in the genocide in Gaza, supported by both Conservative and Labour parties, is a national disgrace, shame from which our reputation will possibly never recover. That our leaders and our alternative leader are up to their neck in Palestinian blood, in the blood of children and women. We have armed it. We have diplomatically covered for it in the United Nations and in other international fora. Our media has endlessly propagandized for it, lied for it. Our Royal Air Force pilots have been forced to fly out of Cyprus on intelligence gathering missions for Netanyahu's murder gang. Who can tolerate such a state of affairs when millions, people say this is a Muslim thing, as if Muslim voters were less than other voters. But get used to this, there's 3.5 million Muslim voters. And scarcely any of them are going to vote Labour at the general election. But most of the people on the marches, protests, all the different manifestations of distress, grief even, about Gaza in Britain are not Muslims. They are white English people, Scottish, Welsh, Irish people. In their millions, most of them are not Muslims. So who are they going to vote for? Well, I think they're going to vote for the Workers' Party and for the independents that we are supporting up and down the country. About 100 of them we are supporting. And why would they not? Why would they vote for the guy that did all that and the guy who supported the guy doing all that? This is a matter of simple electoral logic, which journalists either can't or pretend they can't understand. So that would be the first thing I'd say. And I think the second thing I would say is that we are potentially headed to Armageddon. And if we don't get out of this death spiral, then none of this will have been worth arguing over at all. I'm going to make a prediction to you, Andrew. If Keir Starmer becomes the Prime Minister, within 6 months, Britain will be at war. I don't mean a proxy war. I don't mean special forces dressed up as Arabs or Russians, Ukrainians. I mean an actual war with British forces deployed within 6 months of Keir Starmer becoming Prime Minister. And then it's game on, I'm afraid to say it.